everyone. I'm Lindsay Cuiava, the host of Flipping the Script, a podcast all about creating theater for modern audiences and inspiring you to make art that matters in your community. As a dramaturg and theater consultant, I see all the time how theater makers are stuck creating art that is sterilized and lacks connection to their communities, and especially lacks connection to young people. For the past decade, I have worked in conservative small towns and in liberal urban centers to create theater that engages audiences and brings communities together in impactful ways. Through this podcast, I am so excited to bring you awesome conversations around hot topics in theater today, slightly sassy commentary, a little bit of butt kicking, and inspiration to make art that matters. Today, I'm joined by my friend and fabulous artist, Chessa Betancourt. Chessa is an amazing Seattle-based artist, director, choreographer, storyteller, and intimacy director. She's joining me today to talk about intimacy directing and just what it is and how it impacts educators and theater makers at the community level. Hope you enjoy. Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Flipping the Script. Today, I am joined by Chessa Betancourt from Seattle. She is one of my absolute favorite people and also just a lovely human. So I'm super excited that you're here. We are going to be talking all about this new hot topic that is sweeping the theater and entertainment industry, I guess, as in general, by storm, of intimacy directing and just what this all is. I really admire your work. But before we jump really deep into that, I'm just wondering if you can introduce us to yourself and what you do. I'm terrible at introducing people, so I'll let you say how awesome you are to us.
Yeah. So I do a lot of different things. I'm an actor by trade and by training. And I also am a teacher and a teaching artist. And I also do a lot of movement choreography and dance and and I produce a storytelling event. I do a lot of things.
Yeah, which, okay, before we jump into the intimacy thing, this storytelling event, I am always out of town when you're doing them, but I am so enamored by it. Can we just talk about it for a few seconds?
Yeah,
sure. Tell us about She Is Fierce.
Yeah, so She Is Fierce, the full title is She Is Fierce, Stories from the Female and Genderqueer Perspective.
Perfect.
It's a very long title. It's basically, it's a lot like The Moth, if you've ever heard Moth stories. Yeah.
I love The Moth.
Yeah, it's sort of modeled after The Moth in that it's a recurring storytelling event where people who are non-binary or female identifying tell stories from their lives that matter to them. And that's basically the whole concept, except for that the people, we choose a theme every show and then people submit, and the submissions we choose, those people also get the opportunity to, if they want to, collaborate with a local artist. So if they're story, I feel would really go well with dance, but I don't know any dancers, then I find a professional dancer in Seattle and connect them and sort of facilitate that collaboration.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's really wonderful. We are about to go into our 7th show in April.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
Yeah. And we have merch and we're so just legit. We're about to launch our website. It's very exciting.
That's awesome.
Yeah, we've been around for 2 years, a little bit over 2 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's so I do so that.
Great. Yeah.
That's another thing I do.
Yeah.
And then most recently this year, a lot of my educational background is in sociology and social services and trauma-informed care. And so I also have recently started doing intimacy work in theater.
Yeah.
Which is what we're going to talk about today.
We are going to talk about that today.
Yeah.
And I had no idea that you were doing this work until last fall. Brie Theater, we hosted a masterclass on how do you approach material with kids that have these tricky things.
Yeah.
And you were teaching a totally different class on gender identity for us.
Yes.
And you were I also do intimacy stuff. And I'm what? This is crazy.
Yeah.
Which I can't think of anybody better to be doing this work because you are so heart led through the work that you do and so in tune with empathy.
Thank you.
So I think that, you're a great fit for it. So for folks that are listening, what is intimacy directing? Because that's kind of how this is being referred to.
Yeah.
And it's new. And I think a lot of people, especially in more, if they're not super connected to a theater hub where professional theater is being done all the time, it can kind of seem a buzzword.
and like a crazy thing that people are throwing out there. So like, what is it?
Yeah. Yeah, it is sort of a brand new concept. I mean, I think there's people that have been doing it, and directors specifically that have mm-hmm. been doing work like consent work and stuff and teachers and stuff that have been doing work in like consent and bodily autonomy for a long time. But yeah. it's sort of been coined, in like the larger like theater and film community. It's mm-hmm. sort of been coined as like intimacy direction, okay. intimacy choreography, intimacy sometimes. When I do it, I'm sort of just there for a conversation. And so sometimes I like call myself a consultant.
Okay.
Intimacy Directors International, which is an organization that certifies people in this type of work mm-hmm. through their own training program, has like coined in like intimacy direction. Mm-hmm. But I think it can take a lot of different forms because we're still sort of figuring out, I think, as a larger like national and international community, what it means. But essentially, right. It's the like choreography of intimate content. And okay. for me, that can mean sexual content, it can mean romantic content, it can mean traumatic content, and it can mean violent content.
Okay.
So for me, there's, so that's sort of, and it's also when you're sort of intimacy directing, intimacy choreographing, that's the word.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of described as like you're responsible for the safety and the comfort of the actors and
okay.
the people involved in the production, in addition to like choreographing.
Yeah.
So that's sort of like the broad concept. It's a concept that's, I think, come out of the Me Too movement, in the sense that we are sort of like noticing how much advantage has been taken in certain situations.
Right.
How much sort of like blurred lines there's been between scene partners or between co-stars in right. a lot of these situations, or like moments where directors have taken advantage of actors mm-hmm. or just also people who have previous trauma having trouble processing what they have to do in film or on stage. And so I think that's sort of what it's come out of, is realizing that there's no standard for handling yeah. intimate content. And so we as a like national community have been like, oh, there's no one has any sort of like touchstone for this type of yeah. work. And so I think that's what this concept has come out of, is the need for that standard and the need for those tools and that support, in the form of either more training or a person that comes into your production. Yeah, so that's basically what it is.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm so glad that this movement is taking place. I mean, I remember in college working, you know, doing scene work studies, even in dance classes sometimes. Mm-hmm. Like, I vividly remember being in a room at the university at like 11 o'clock. We're rehearsing after rehearsals done on some schoolwork. And I had to do some like sexual moments in this script and things that I had never even done as a human at that
yeah,
point.
Yeah.
And so, but I'm there with this guy who is an awesome human, but I didn't know him at the time.
Yeah.
And like looking back on that was probably like not the safest or smartest
totally.
Way to approach that work. But even in rehearsals, it would be like, okay, and now you're going to kiss or you're going to do this,
yep.
which is why that work stresses me out as a human, like being yeah. put into those situations.
Yeah, for sure.
Which is why I've always, I have this like process I work with, and I have since that time mm-hmm. of like, how do we teach consent through theater? And like yep. this whole dialogue, which my students always make fun of me now for, but hey, it's yeah. a good thing.
Yeah.
But I'm so glad that it's happening. And I'd love to hear more about the way that you approach the work.
Mm-hmm.
Before we jump into that, so I know this podcast is mostly for folks that are doing theater at the mm-hmm. school level or yep. the community theater level. I mean, if you guys are doing a professional level and you're tuning in, that is also dope mm-hmm. and awesome. But so, I mean, I hear all the time, right, from schools and community theaters that with the trends that are being talked about in the professional world, that they don't necessarily always feel like they apply to them. How do you feel like, does this apply to those levels at the school and community? Do they need to be as concerned with it as a professional level, or what is your thoughts?
Yes, I think in some ways, I think it's two-pronged, right? Because I think in some ways it needs to be actually more present because you're dealing with young people who may not have as much resource or language around the idea of consent or the idea of agency and bodily autonomy, or who may not feel as comfortable speaking up about discomfort or or feeling unsafe as an adult might be able to. So I think in some ways it's actually a more important thing for when you're working with young people or in a community. And in the other way, there's just not, you're just never going to be touching sexual content or explicit content or nudity in those contexts a lot of the time. And so you're, I would say, like, there's not as much of that, like, technical choreography where you're sort of actually choreographing what an intimate moment looks like, and more of, like, talking through what it means to respect someone's bodily space or, or what it means to, like, deal with content that might be, that might feel intimate to the students. But I think it is important. I think especially because we're learning a lot about what it means to be socialized in our country, which is, like, sort of a whole other podcast. But I think we're learning a lot about how early we learn what consent is, or how early we don't learn that consent is important.
Yeah.
Or how early we learn that maybe our, like, bodies are not ours in certain situations. And so I think in that way it's more important. And also, like, even plays that are built for young people and teenagers and students and children deal with concepts that can feel intimate. Because, like, for me, intimacy sort of goes beyond physical intimacy. It's, like, some of that can be, like, dealing with something that has a lot of heightened emotion or dealing with a concept that maybe feels intimate, or even just, like, a romantic relationship. Even if you never see those two characters kiss, those two people have an intimacy. Or, like, you know, there's, for me, and this is sort of, like, more into my personal approach to intimacy, like, choreographing and consulting, is, like, intimacy for me sort of, like, is a blanket term for a lot of,
we have my cat's here. If you're just listening to the podcast, he has jumped up and is now hanging out with Chessa.
And so I think it's more of a blanket term for, like, all of that stuff that feels intimate that you might need more support for.
Yeah.
Which is something that we should be supporting students in when they're doing something where they have to cry, or when they have to have an intimate argument with someone where they might have someone yelling at them. You know, like, all of that sort of fits into what it means to talk through that content and what it means to be able to step out of that content and all of that sort of, like, self-care stuff. I think intimacy directing, as it's, like, coined right now, specifically applies to sexual content. But for me, I think it's more about teaching young people and actors about what it means to approach content that is intimate or that is explicit or that is hard. So I think in that way, it's almost more important for the educational or community level.
Oh my gosh, yeah. I mean, first of all, I love that you're including emotional aspects into this, because I hear from students all the time that they have a really hard time leaving roles.
Yeah.
I think, and this is not, well, this is kind of a dig, so that's okay. I'm happy. I'm comfortable saying it. I think that a lot of the practices that we're teaching young people right now in acting is that they have to feel the character, they have to be it. And that's very Meisner-esque. And Meisner is not my jam. I know some people love it. I think it's really harmful to do with kids.
Yeah, I do too. And I think, you know, I think adults have trouble stepping out of things. I mean, we look at like famous examples, like someone like Heath Ledger.
Right.
And I think I've been having a lot of conversations with people recently around this idea that, like, for some reason, because it's pretend, because it's acting, we sort of treat those emotions like they are not hard or like they're not real, but the goal is the reality. Like, the goal is to make it seem like it is real. You're trying to simulate those real emotions in yourself, or at least the appearance that you're feeling those emotions. And that can be deeply difficult.
Right.
And if you don't have any tools to sort of step out of those things, then even on a, like, a really basic level, then you sort of are stuck sort of internalizing those things or, like, processing those things on your own instead of being able to remove yourself from them as the actor instead of the character. And, yeah, and that can be really dangerous with kids, especially because a lot of the training that we learn in, like, professional training programs is, like, dig deep and start crying, you know?
Right.
And when also we're treating intimacy like, okay, now you're going to kiss, or okay, now you're going to do the sex scene, instead of, okay, let's approach this really intentionally with a lot of steps and a lot of conversation.
Right.
Like, you're then just encouraging basically for people to simulate the reality of it on stage, which is also like a big thing to ask, especially of people who might be like younger and impressionable than adult, more impressionable than adults.
Right. Well, and even folks that are doing theater as a hobby, right? I mean, like we went to school for acting, so we had training. I don't know what your training exactly looked like, but we had a lot of conversations about like, how do you get in and how do you get out of character? How do you,
us too.
And that's even hard like to apply. So if you're trying to do this at a level with people who are using theater as a tool for a hobby, which is an awesome, amazing thing.
Mm-hmm. Or an educational tool.
Right.
Or
education, it's really, really tough.
Yeah.
And so I think it's almost, as we're going through this and we're talking more, I think it's a little bit of a mind shift of how we think about this as directors and just the approach that we take in the room with folks.
Yeah, because the reality is that it does not feel like playing pretend. It feels like trying to put yourself into false circumstances, but feeling the things in reality, which like any, there's so much psychological research on like the like therapeutic and psychological side in like soft sciences that like, that can feel as real as the real thing.
Absolutely.
Like, that's what post-traumatic stress is you're, like, recreating the exact feeling, even though it's not happening. And so, like, that's what we're doing as actors. We're trying to elicit that on purpose.
Right.
Instead of having post-traumatic stress. Like, we're trying to create, essentially, for ourselves, a response as if the situation were real, which is a really tricky, intense thing to do. And I think there, I think it doesn't have to feel unsafe. It doesn't have to be... It doesn't have to be this, like, deeply hurtful process, which sometimes it can be with content that's really hard.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to feel like the lines are blurred when it comes to, like, intimacy in some way. Like, it doesn't have to feel, it doesn't have to feel dangerously intimate. There are ways to put a lot of structure in place so that, A, the story is good, and B, everyone feels safe and comfortable.
Yeah. No, and... This is awesome. I am echoing everything that you say. We're going to take a really short break, but I want to come back because I have a question for you on if you think that any of the like, the, actually, I'm just going to wait till the break. And then I'm gonna, come back. It's a really good one. Awesome. So we're back. Great. For those of you that maybe, I don't know, skipped ahead or something, I'm Lindsay Cuiava. I'm here with Chessa Bentancourt, and we're chatting about intimacy directing and what all this is. So before the break, we were talking a little bit about community theater. And as we were on the break, I had this question, that this thing that popped in my head of, so, you know, a lot of times, I mean, when I, especially when I was like working in community theater and school spaces, all the time there would be like these issues of like the leads, like if they were in high school, like they'd end up dating after or whatever. Or like a lot of times in community theater, there was affairs going on left and right between people maybe that were playing leads together or even just in general. And I'm wondering, do you think any of that has a correlating factor to what we were talking about with not knowing how to get in and out of character and not having good systems for that?
Yeah, I do. I think that that's harmless. My current partner is someone that I was initially a romantic lead with and had a sexual scene.
Oh, there you go.
Like, and we're like, cool, we're madly in love now. So I think that's actually the like highly positive outcome of sort of like unbridled like romantic intimacy on stage. The negative outcome is assault and breaches of consent and people feeling like people who have undergone some sort of like sexual abuse or trauma being triggered or people feeling unsafe and not having any place to put that information. So I think that's actually like the like on one end of the spectrum, it's like a beautiful way to fall in love. And on the other end of the spectrum, it's like when you don't put those things in place, you're also letting, it's like you're sort of letting open the floodgates for all of the good and all of the bad. So if your scene partner is someone who you actually have some sort of like really lovely connection with, then you're letting in all of the good, and then you are in this really intimate relationship with them all of a sudden, and then you're realizing you want an actual intimate relationship with them.
Right.
But then you're also letting in all of the bad, that if maybe it's someone who is making you feel uncomfortable in some way, or maybe you have a previous experience that it's like bringing up a lot of difficult emotional processing and labor.
Mm-hmm.
That's also what comes through when you don't put those things in place. So I right. think it does, but I think it's like the best case scenario is that you fall in love forever.
Right.
Or not like best case scenario, because you're not trying to do that, but you're sort right. of, when you don't put those structures in place, you're sort of letting in whatever can happen.
Yeah.
Which is a really large spectrum of what is possible. And one of the things that's possible is that you end up falling in love, and another thing that's possible is that you end up being abused in some way.
Yeah.
And so I think that it's a dangerous thing to do. I think it's like, I like kind of love when it happens. I mean, it's like, obviously it's yeah. happened to me. And like, it's like, you know, everyone like gets really excited when people who have played romantic leads like get together.
Right.
But I think it also, it like, if you are, you know, if like you mentioned affairs, you know, like if you're already yeah. in a relationship and then you're having a lot of trouble setting boundaries or stepping out of a character you're playing, like that is a problem. Like if yeah. you don't have the tools to set boundaries and then you end up in this very confusing place, like I think that is like difficult for actors, you know, because if they're like experiencing that with someone and they don't have structure in place or like a system in place, or they're not communicating about those boundaries, then I think those things can develop by accident.
Right.
Yeah, and then that's also like a hard waters to navigate, you know.
Yeah.
So I do think that's related. And I think it's a natural thing that we do. I think that's, you know, art imitates life. It's like we are simulating an intimate relationship, and sometimes that can elicit an yeah. intimate relationship, which I think is just like human nature. I think that's just part of being a person.
Totally.
You know?
Right.
And I think it's important to set those boundaries, because I also yeah. think those relationships will develop regardless. I don't think
Absolutely.
That's the way that you find yeah. your way to your partner. I yeah. think, like, if you're going to fall in love with that person, just being around them in general is going to make you fall in love with that. You
yeah.
know, like,
right.
And the thing that you gain from putting in those boundaries is that you prevent all the bad things in that, you know,
yeah.
floodgate from coming through. You're filtering
totally.
Those things.
Yeah, and so, I mean, you kept on mentioning how the good side of it, which there definitely is great things. I think that's actually, like, a lot of times those situations is why theater people bond so well and so, like, closely, because
yeah.
you're going through these experiences.
Definitely.
But the negative, and that made me think of, this is something that, you know, I see all the time at community theater level, and I experienced as a young person, not as a person in the situation, but I saw it. The idea of having young people on stage having to have intimate moments with adults.
Yep.
So, like, I'm talking, like, 15-year-old and a 25-year-old, mm-hmm. or, like, a 17-year-old and a 60-year-old. Like,
yep.
I'm thinking of, there was a production of South Pacific when I was teaching back in, before I moved to Seattle, and they had one of my students, I think she was 17 or something, was playing the lead, and then the male lead was like very, very much older. I want to say 60, but he may not have been 60.
Uh-huh.
Like, what are your thoughts on, what should we be doing with that? Should that be something that we're aware of? Is that an issue? I mean, I think it is. I'm curious what your take on it is.
I think it is an issue. I think it should never happen. I think mm-hmm. there's never a reason to put those people in that situation.
Okay.
So I think, yeah, we were sort of talking before we started recording about, like, age of consent and mm-hmm. if that should be considered. And the federal age of consent is actually a lot younger than I would say it should be, is 12.
Yeah, which is insane.
Which is a child.
Yeah.
So I would say, like, to sort of ignore that. And I think, like, minors should only be in those situations on stage with other minors.
Sure.
I think because it can... In terms of, like, I obviously, like, don't have extensive education on, like, childhood development, but what I do know about it is that, like, there's just things that are very hard to process and very hard to contextualize mm-hmm. if you are young enough. And I think that is an issue of, like, you know, I hesitate to use the word statutory, but I'm having trouble coming up with a different word.
So you can, like, say statutory without the ramification of statutory.
Right, great. Correct.
Cool.
Yeah, I think that that should never happen. I think that that's not a situation that you should ever be putting that young person in, regardless. I also, like, I feel pretty strongly, because I'm, you know, trained a little bit in, like, how trauma can affect people. I feel really strongly about not putting young people in situations. Like, I really struggle with children and, like, horror films or, like, films that are super violent, or, like, having them do things or say things or witness things, even in a pretend acting controlled environment, that can be hard for them to process. I, like, feel very strongly about that. So I think, for me, that should never happen. I think you should never be putting – I think if you're going to have a situation where someone who is – like, if the story is around someone who is older and someone who is younger, I think that person needs to be in their 20s at the very least.
Okay.
Who looks younger.
Sure.
I think you should never be putting an actual young person in that situation. I think then if it needs to be someone who's playing a teenager, that person needs to be over 18.
Yeah.
For me. There's no, again, there's, like, no national standard. But
Which is so frustrating. But
But I think younger than that, you're starting to create in that person a confusing, like, developmental piece that they're going to have trouble contextualizing in their regular world, especially if there's physical contact.
Yeah. Because I hear all the time, so I think there is definitely a line, and we kind of use it to our advantage for how that works for us, but of the line between being on stage and reality. So, like, right. I mean, I'll hear a lot of times, like, some parents won't allow their kid to swear on stage because that's not what they allow in real life. Whereas some parents are like, okay, but it's stage and it's not them as a human. It's them playing a role.
Yeah.
And I hear this a lot with this particular topic of kissing and intimate moments and that sort of thing. And I think that as adults, we just need to do better.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, you can use that argument. But if you're using that argument because you did it or that's the way things used to be done.
No longer acceptable.
Yeah, we used to do a lot of things. Like, women were, like, not allowed to work.
We used to not have seatbelts.
Right.
You know, like.
Right.
There's, like, a lot of stuff we used to do.
We've evolved and we've gone. And, you know, if you're a director that's listening to this and maybe getting a little angry at that last point, I just encourage you. I never am trying to say anything that's angry. Or that's
sure.
Ever. Like, I don't want that. I mean, well, that's not true. Sometimes I do want to get people riled up. But this is not one of those examples. I encourage you, if you're like, well, that's just not possible with my demographic, I'm going to have young people in these situations with older people, that we need to do some work around show selection and why we're picking shows. But
absolutely.
That's a whole nother podcast and a whole nother series that we should do.
Totally. Yeah. I think choosing the content is a big part of it. And I think... yeah, we were talking before about, like, do you think that there are people that believe that having young people kiss or, like, interact physically on stage at all is like, should not be allowed?
Yeah, it's, like, against the law, some people think.
Yeah, and I think there's some validity to that. I personally think in, like, a high school, making students younger than 16 kiss each other, there's some leeway with things like touch or embrace or like, you know, stage combat. Like there, I think that is sort of like stuff that you have to navigate really carefully. I think having students kiss each other who are younger than 16 can, I just would not do it because you get into sort of those like dangerous waters of the way that that student might be taking that in in ways that you can't control, and you're actually like kind of not qualified to handle, you know, like that can get difficult. I think because they sort of are not at the point where they can sort of like really step in and out, where they can sort of like really define that line for themselves of on stage and off stage, and sort of where they're learning what bodily autonomy even is.
Right.
And if we're already putting them in situations where they have to touch each other no matter what, it's like that. And they're still figuring out how to even advocate for when they do and do not want to be touched. Like, that is a hard thing. So I would say younger than 16, students shouldn't be kissing on stage. And I love what you said before when you were talking about this, that, like, if you are putting – Lindsay said this. This is not me. I'm not claiming this statement. But I really love it that if you are putting situations – students in situations on stage where they are sexualized at all, you shouldn't be. Like, yeah, it's you need never, to reevaluate.
Like, you shouldn't even, like, I mean, I've worked on productions where we'll put girls in, like, very tight dresses or something.
Because they're, like, the vixen of the right. show or whatever.
I mean, I'm, like, not this person in real life at all. Like, I don't give off a vibe of, like, being sexy or anything. And, like, as a child, was always cast in those positions. And yeah. I was, like, I am so uncomfortable. Like, I just, back in the day, I wore, like, my extra large show t-shirts and 3 size too big pants all the time. Yeah. Like, but I think that's something that we can think of. Like, if you're doing a show that demands a character that is sexualized, which exists and is fine. Like, I mean, I'm looking Absolutely. At this wall right now. Like, hair, that is a key component of some of the characters in that show.
For sure.
So that's fine. But you gotta be careful with kids because yeah. That also puts the audience in such an uncomfortable situation. Like, it is
where
always,
they're sexualizing a teenager. Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Because, and because teenagers don't always look like teenagers, but they are.
Yeah. And you're also then, because you're in this, like, developmental time of, like, adolescence, you're also then, when you're casting that person, saying, like, oh, you will be sexualized.
Yeah.
And also that, like, they start to, you know, feel that way about themselves.
Right.
And so I think, like, there are ways to, I think, because there's, so, you know, there's so many shows where, like, someone walks on stage and, like, the lead character falls in love. And I think that person doesn't need to be dressed in that way.
No.
You can sell it with the acting that is
right.
not a way where you are sexualizing
right.
them. Or you
oh
are
gosh.
Romanticizing them but not sexualizing them. There's so many ways.
And I'm not saying that to wear a nun costume. Like, we're not, yeah. like, everybody's gotta walk around like they're in the Abbey from The Sound of Music. Like, that's right. not what we're saying, right?
Yeah.
Like, but you don't need a girl in, like, a super, super, super tight skirt. Or I even get uncomfortable when young men don't have shirts on. That is
yeah, absolutely.
So gross to me. Like,
on stage, asking a teenage boy to do that is an intense
and like,
thing.
I just worked on a show where the boys were like, please, we definitely want to. And I was like, that, like, I mean,
yeah,
I'm
glad. Yeah, but that's why they don't get to call the shots. Like,
I'm glad that you feel so confident in yourself.
Yeah.
But also, it's really awkward. Like, I just couldn't imagine, like, you know, like, as a parent sitting there and being like, wow, that's my child who
yeah.
works out really hard and is athletic, but I don't know. And
yeah, for sure. And it's also like, I also would say, like, in addition to the student being at least 16, I think in addition, and consent is a huge part of this work, right?
Right.
Like, the first, when I come in and intimacy coordinate or choreograph, like, the first things out of my mouth are things about agency, autonomy, and consent.
Okay.
And what that
yeah.
means for everyone and mm-hmm. what parts of their body can be touched and what context they can be touched and what cannot. Like,
right.
And what it means to verbalize that to everyone else so that everyone else is now responsible for that information. But I think, you know, like, both the students and if they are a minor, their parents should all have given, like,
signed
consent.
Yeah.
We also, you know, like, consent in real life, sexual consent in real life, we're, like, being more vocal about the fact that it is not just, like, you say yes once and then whatever
yep.
happens goes. The way that I facilitate intimacy is, like, you can retract consent at any time.
Mm-hmm.
So if you get to the point where you're at the kiss and a student is like, I thought I was okay with this, but this feels bad to me, then you stop and you find a different artistic solution.
Mm-hmm.
No one should ever be in a situation where they're like, well, I said, I was in a show a couple years ago where I had to be fully naked. And in the audition process, I was like, yeah, I can do that. And then the context in which I was fully naked, it was an immersive show. People could be close to my body. And I was also in a situation where I was somewhat immobilized while
oh
I was
gosh.
Naked. Also, it was a show where, like, people could drink and stuff. There was, like, a lot of components to it that were not, like, just, like, being, I'm doing air quotes for those of you
You're
that
watching.
Are
yeah.
that not watching,
yeah.
but, like, being nude on stage was a
right.
completely different thing than I anticipated happening.
Totally.
And but I didn't have any language or any, no one had told me it was okay to say, I don't feel comfortable with this anymore. Because as actors, we're sort of taught to, like, not be difficult to work with or not
right.
be combative or not push back. And the way that I facilitate is, like, I basically say to a director when I decide to work with them, I'm going to tell your actors they can say no.
Good.
And I'm going to tell them that if they say no, you will change what's happening. So if you're not okay with that, I can't work with you.
I love that.
Because we, and especially young students, already in a power dynamic with a teacher or a director where they're the kid and you're the adult. So they're always going to default to you even when they feel uncomfortable. And so it's important that they know that their body is theirs and that they don't have to do anything with it that they don't feel safe with. And I also just, like, I want to, like, clock this, even though we're not talking about gender identity at all, but, like, the shirt off thing is, like, if there's a student who's maybe, you know, not out as trans or someone who's non-binary, but who is, like, starting to navigate those feelings or those thoughts, putting them in a situation where their shirt might have to be off if they are male-bodied but female-identifying or, like, non-binary identifying, that's gonna create a lot of difficult, like, there's just no reason to put them in that situation because potentially, you know, for some reason we think men can be topless and women can't and be like freak out about breasts. But I think also, you know, if that student who was male identifying or male bodied then eventually is not, they're going to look back on that as a time when they were topless on stage. You know, like that, you know, maybe. I don't actually know. You know, I don't identify that way, so I don't know how they could interpret their own bodies. But that is something to, like,
consider.
Consider is that, like, we have weirdly different standards based on gender of how much of someone's body can be seen. And, like, it's a that's not an okay position to put a student in where you're like, because you have this body, I'm going to decide that you can have your shirt off. You know?
Like, it's no. I think, I mean, all of this, like, what it's boiling down to is I talk about all the time the idea of what micro changes can you change that, what micro changes can you make? That doesn't make sense otherwise. In your practices that make a huge difference. I mean, giving people that autonomy, for sure. And yeah, we can all take the example, right, of, like, the difficult student or the difficult actor. And they're not going to go away. They're going to exist. And as a director, you got to put your, you gotta pull your pants up and you're like, all right, here we go. I also hate that term phrase. I hate that. Sorry. but yeah, you, like, buckle down and you're like, okay, I cast this person. You have a, as a director, you always have a choice that if somebody is constantly taking advantage of you, you can fire them or let them go. And you in the future can choose to not work with them.
Yeah.
But you should not be making these blanket statements and blanket policies because you're concerned about one person who's going to take advantage of you. You should be, especially at the high school level, we should be always teaching our kids that they have control over their bodies. Like, what a crazy thing to not be teaching.
And I, you know, that was 2 years ago. I was 27.
Yeah.
It's like at that age, I was, you know, in my late 20s, at full adulthood, I didn't feel like I had the right to say, I don't want hundreds of people to see my naked body strapped to a table. Like, I didn't feel like I could say that, which is an insane
It's crazy.
Thing. And that's what we teach, I think. And I, you know, I don't know that this is true, but I have a feeling it's sort of like a little bit more normal to make female actors or female identifying actors feel as though they can't be combative or that they can't push back, because then you're going to be seen as, like, quote unquote, like, difficult to work with,
right?
Which is what I was afraid of. I was like, oh, this is a big company. Like, I don't want to seem like I'm being a diva or whatever.
Right.
By taking ownership over my own body and deciding who can and can't see it. Because there's also the reality is there is always a different artistic solution. Like, we actually, I actually think kissing or sex or, like, you know, nudity is actually a lot of times the the less artistic or the easy way to communicate something. When there is one of my friends who I've talked about with intimacy a lot, she says, you know, like, there's nothing more intimate than, like, counting the freckles on someone's arm and or, like, and stuff like that that, like, there's so many ways to communicate the feeling or the theme that you're trying to talk about that you should never be saying, well, it has to be this way.
Right.
So you have to swallow what's happening for the sake of the show. Because it's also, in reality, it's always just a story.
Yeah.
And no one should ever be sacrificing their bodily autonomy, safety, or comfort for the a story. They just shouldn't be. Or their emotional safety. You know, like, that just should never happen.
Right. That's so true. So as we're, so I'm thinking, like, I mean, we've talked about so many different awesome things. So if anybody's listening and they're like, okay, you've sold me, this is so true. Do you have, like, any, like, just maybe even, like, two or three just quick like mindset changes that directors can take into the room when they're approaching new work to just like kind of keep this like, because we had talked before we started recording, like this is a vast like body of work, mm-hmm. and it's not something that everybody is going to or should be doing.
Yeah.
But as directors, especially like if you're in a rural community, you're almost certainly not going to have somebody who's trained in intimacy directing. That's fine. But what can directors do to create a space and like to be just more conscious of it? Like two or three quick things. What do you think?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm glad you mentioned that. Like before I go into two or three quick things, I think that this is tricky waters. I'm saying waters a lot. That's as great. Like my metaphor, but whatever.
It's not raining in Seattle today,
so we're just thinking about water. Yeah. I think that this is a tricky role because I think I'm not certified in any way. I just have a background that sort of like I think suits this work well. But I approach this work every time I work with someone with the statement of like, hold me accountable.
Mm-hmm.
I am also still learning. Yeah. I am applying what I know, but you are always welcome to have this conversation with me where you are sort of saying, I don't feel comfortable with like what you're saying, or I want to ask you why we're doing this or whatever. Because I do think this type of work bleeds into what can seem like work that you would need different training for, like therapy or counseling, yeah. or you know, like even like a physician, because sure. you're dealing with body, you know, like it bleeds into a lot of different fields, which is what's cool about it.
Mm-hmm.
And also I think I'm very careful to both own that I like believe that I can call myself mm-hmm. someone who can choreograph intimacy, and totally. Also I believe in checking that yeah. a lot.
We should all be checking our abilities and what yeah. we're qualified to be doing all the time.
Yeah,
and that's great.
One of the things that I do as an intimacy choreographer, wow, I'm having a lot of trouble with that word today, is I provide the director, stage manager, whatever, with a resource list mm-hmm. of crisis hotline, places to report sexual assault, and counselors.
That's so smart.
And counselors for different demographics, like people who specifically work with the queer community, people who specifically work with POC. And I do that because sometimes in trauma like care, we call what we call limited scope, where mm-hmm. if you're working with someone in like an educational context and they are triggered by something and you're not trained for that, you get them out of that situation quickly,
mm-hmm.
but then you refer them. You don't, or like you give them the list. You like, you should never be prescribing those things for people, obviously.
Right.
But yeah. if someone needs a resource, you don't take on the role of like their therapist, you know, like mm-hmm. you hand it to someone who is trained in that.
Okay.
So that's one thing that I do as someone who choreographs intimacy is I also hand the director or the stage manager, whatever authority, I say, here's this list.
Mm-hmm.
You can provide it to your whole cast in case they need it. Or also if you get to a point where you are trying to guess at what they need because you don't have the training for it, you should be handing it off to someone who does.
Totally.
Which is like, you know, in a lot of educational contexts, teachers, you know, hand things off to counselors.
Right.
Because they're not trained in it.
Mm-hmm.
And they like refer them to that. And there's not, in intimacy directing, there's not a formal process for that.
Sure.
But you should be thinking always about, you should always be checking yourself in that way.
Totally.
So that's one tip I would say is like, yeah. sit down, be humble, in the words of Kendrick Lamar. Like, do not ever think you know everything about this work.
Right.
Even if I would say, even if you're someone who's certified by IDI, I think you should never be assuming that you are the authority, because that is where the power dynamic gets.
Ooh.
Like, intimacy and power dynamics is very important to consider. If you are if you're choreographing intimacy, you are in a huge position of power.
Yeah.
Especially if you're doing it with young people. And you need to always be making sure that you're not abusing that power or thinking of yourself as the only authority or all
so
powerful.
True. Yeah.
So that's one tip I would say is like keep checking yourself and keep making sure that you're not like, for lack of a better word, like making stuff up. Like
yeah.
that you're not just like going on the fly, that you
right.
are supporting your students or your cast in the best way that you are trained for or know how or have your have the knowledge for.
Yeah.
Because I don't believe that formal training is the only way to get that information.
Totally.
So know what your limited scope is.
Yeah.
And be able to have resources that you can implement if you reach that limited scope.
Awesome.
Which I think is something that educators are already trained in. You know, like I said, sure. You pass something off to a counselor, to someone who's trained in something, if you need to, you know?
Right.
Or if you like are a director and you're trying to choreograph a dance number and you have no idea what you're doing, you pass it off to a choreographer,
you
know?
Maybe they'd help you do.
Yeah, right, yeah.
Bad. But yeah.
So that's one thing that I think is really important in this work, because it's sort of a weird combination of a lot of different fields.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing is, I would say, like, always keep checking in with your students about their safety and comfort.
Yeah.
Because as even if you say it at the very beginning, like, you always have the right to raise your hand at something, it is important to keep reminding them of that.
Yeah.
And that if there is any discomfort or something that feels sort of off, everything should stop.
Totally.
Giving them a safe word is something I always do.
Ooh, I like that.
And like, kids love like things that are like right. inside jokes for that. So like, right. if you say, obviously, like, this could be abused by teenagers, but like, if you say this word if you need to.
Right.
And you can say, like, think of something silly, like unicorn is right. our safe word, which you will say if at any point you need things to stop and you need something to be addressed. They're obviously gonna like probably like shout it from the rooftops in like really inappropriate circumstances.
Yeah, right.
But like, you know, it's useful so that they don't have to in that moment be like, I'm uncomfortable because I'm feeling like you're being sexually aggressive. You know, like they
right.
don't have to say all yeah. those words to get out of the situation that they're in.
Right.
So I would say like, yeah, check-ins and safe words.
I'm also like a really
great.
Big proponent, sorry, in that too. Of having like until okay, so it takes a while to create a cultivate a space that has that, like
yes.
years, like you gotta like work on this for years.
Absolutely.
And when we were doing introspect, I at some point reached it, and man, some of the times it was hard because the kids could call me out at any time they wanted, and boy did they take advantage
yeah.
of it.
Oh yeah. Saying they can raise their hand at stuff, you are gonna run up against that rambunctious teenager that's like, I don't feel comfortable with this, and
right.
that is a small price to pay and for the other end.
It's very small. And
yeah.
I honestly never encountered it in a way that actually attacked me. I felt threatened sometimes.
Right.
But threatened is an ego response.
Right.
Attacked,
defensive is different.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Attacked is different. But I'm a really big proponent of having a space, like a suggestion box type thing, where people are able to leave their thoughts. Because
yes,
sometimes
totally.
Kids just don't feel comfortable.
Yeah.
Doing that, and especially, I mean, even in a community theater, you should be doing that as well. And
I would say at all levels.
Everywhere.
You should be, yeah, and I do it by email, so I basically say,
oh, great.
I basically give them like, okay, cool, if you want to say something to your director, stage manager, or me, I can be, if you don't feel comfortable going to either of those people, I can be a space for that. But I do it by email for adults, but I do it at the professional level where I say, if you don't feel comfortable sharing something verbally,
yeah,
email me. But I think for students, it makes sense for them to write something and put it in an anonymous box.
Yeah.
So that it can be anonymous.
Right.
Or so that it can be really, really private. I think even at the professional level, you need to give people multiple avenues of being able to communicate something.
Right. Because,
for sure.
Yeah, you have to, that whole thing about that power is just like totally like resonating with me. Because
yeah.
you do have to check your power and understand that some people are going to be scared to bring these things up to you. But it's so important that you know, because I also think that any person who's creating art would feel like just destroyed if they knew that they did something that actively hurt someone.
Totally. And also, like, it's so easy to, like, forget yourself on stage. And so, like, sometimes someone might be doing something that they don't realize they're doing.
Right.
And you don't want to shame them for doing something by accident. But if you've already had the conversation of, like, here's what's appropriate, here's what consent is, then it doesn't have to be, you've done this bad thing. It's like, hey, we talked about this thing and I just want to like let you know, are you aware that you're actually touching me in a place that I said it wasn't okay?
Yes.
And that way you've already established that that's what the culture of what this production is.
Totally.
So they don't have to feel like they've, you know, done something deeply, deeply wrong and evil.
Right.
They've just forgotten this one piece of it that you're just reminding them of.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think the last thing that I would say is, like, with every piece of what you would consider intimate content, whether it's physical interaction or violence or like some type of intimacy, I would always say, is this the necessary way to do it? If you're making anyone kiss, if you're making anyone touch each other mm-hmm. in an intimate way, if you're putting any sort of like violence or like really suggestive, like explicit thing on stage, nudity too, I would say, is this necessary to the story?
Oh my gosh.
And then if you get to the point and they say no, because the answer is always no, it's not necessary to the story. But is this, like, in your ideal world, is this necessary to the story?
Right.
And then always having something in your back pocket that's an artistic solution if you can't do it.
Right.
And always telling the students that it's fine if they don't do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not making it seem like a burden. Like being like, I mean, if you're not comfortable, we can do something
yeah,
else.
Or like, so much extra time and work. And that's down. The other thing. I know this is like 4 to 5 tips.
That's great.
But the other thing is working through those types of scenes in that way where you're sort of deciding exactly where everyone's hands go, where you're sort of deciding, okay, making sure consent is given every time mm-hmm. before the show. Okay, let's decide exactly how long this lasts. All of that stuff takes a long time. So I would say the other thing is budget your rehearsal time so that you can yes. actually, because I've tried to speed up the process before Oof. And been like, and been like, cool, so we're going to like take our time with this first half. And then the second half, oh, we only have a half an hour of rehearsal left. So let's just like speed through it. And then that has basically made that time useless because right. like it totally like voids the rest of the time that you spent.
Right.
It will take as much time as it takes and you need to take as much time as it will take
to
make sure that every second of that scene has been established for that and everyone knows what to expect and everyone knows where they're being touched or like what is happening or what, you know, volume someone's like voice is going to be at, cuz like someone screaming in someone's face is an intimate act, you
yeah.
know. So like
so true.
It's going to add rehearsal time. It just will.
Mm-hmm.
But it is so worthwhile. And I've watched it make the storytelling better. And also the feedback that I've gotten from the artists has been, I've never like felt this safe in a production. And that is like so priceless compared to the rehearsal time that you will lose.
Right. I love that. And it is so important. I think just every director out there or theater maker to make sure like just budgeting for the important things. Remembering that the final like aesthetic outcome is only a small fraction of the process.
Yeah.
And you can't get that aesthetic outcome consistently without budgeting for the important things like this.
Yep. Yeah.
And that's really the biggest takeaway from me doing theater is like helping people interact with their world as a human better.
Yeah.
And this is, I think that I'm so glad that intimacy directing is something that is being talked about more because I think I always say that theater is the only place our young people actually get to, like, test the real world. It's the only time they get to examine relationships and dissect them and figure out, like, what is comfortable, what is not, even with themselves, like, what am I comfortable with? Because they don't get asked those questions in normal school.
Right. And you are providing them a space where they can openly, you should be providing them a space where they can openly communicate with you about that. So that they can learn how to do that in real life.
Right.
If they've learned that consent is important and that they get to decide when and how their body gets touched, or they can decide that it doesn't get touched at all, they will carry that into adulthood.
Correct.
They will be able to advocate for themselves in future, and you may be preventing
an assault
something
from happening
to them. Like, it's an important role that you are playing.
Right.
And if you handle it in an incorrect way, which I think a lot of us have in the past, just
because
the way we used to do things, right? It's just been like, okay, now we're going to do the kiss. Spend like the scene kissing.
Right.
Like, we've learned that we can't say no. And we need to know that we can.
Right.
And they need to know that they can.
Well, and what like better legacy as an educator could you have than to someday, would you rather get an email from a student someday that says, hey, you know, like, being in the musical like really helped me with like my public speaking or whatever, or hey, being in the musical actually helped me like be able to communicate and get myself out of a situation that I didn't like.
Yeah.
I mean, just think. Or like even for, I mean, I've worked on I worked on a show that was, I mean, I worked on Rock of Ages, which is a ridiculous show for high school students to do. But we turned it into like a whole thing of like learning about consent. And we had a lot of conversations with a guy, with the young men in this show that were like, oh, like there was like light bulbs that went on. And we talked about the idea of like the nice guy and that kind of stuff.
Absolutely.
And I think that it's just as important for our young women as it is for our young men. And like there's such big learnings. And I just so encourage everybody that's listening to take this into your practice. And if there's any young people listening to this episode, to know that you are empowered to use your voice. And if an adult doesn't respect that, that's probably a toxic situation that you don't want to involve yourself mm-hmm. in.
And I think another benefit of having someone coordinating the intimacy mm-hmm. is that you have another person who's specifically meant to receive those things. Right. That, like, if you don't, because sometimes, you know, if you don't feel safe with a person, and I've had many times where, you know, I was like, I don't feel like this director is going to receive this well. I don't feel safe telling them this.
Yeah.
And I didn't have anywhere else to put that information. So I was like, I guess I'll keep it to myself.
Right.
Which is, like, not what you want. No. You want for there to be as many avenues as possible and as many types, you know, writing yeah. instead of saying,
for
you know,
sure.
like, you want there to be as many ways for a student to talk about something that they're experiencing as possible.
Absolutely. Tessa, this has been amazing. gosh, every time I talk to you, I just love you more.
Oh,
so,
yay.
I've been so much more impressed with your work. So if folks that are listening are, first of all, if you're interested in learning more about this intimacy, this whole topic, Tessa did mention IDI, which is Intimacy Directors International.
Yeah.
You can check their website out.
Oh, one thing I think we had to make sure that we say is I'm not certified by
Correct.
Them.
So that's very important to mention. Tessa's not certified by IDI. You could go check and read a little bit more about their resources there. But I also know that ReTheater, the theater education consulting company that I run, and Tessa also works for, we will definitely be doing trainings on this, mm-hmm. especially this summer, because it's
And they're
going to
be
important.
Mostly informational because right. I'm new to this work myself, and
yeah.
so I will not be training anyone on how to do it.
No, just tips for directors of how to, you
yes,
know, approach
how
work.
To approach the content is mostly going to be what
yeah.
that is.
Totally.
Yeah.
So yeah, make
yes.
sure we're very clear on that. We're not training anybody. There will be workshops. I should use that word instead.
Yeah, or like
we will be,
seminars.
Right,
we'll basically
seminars.
Just be like talking about it.
And it's
it.
All online. So we're going to be talking about it. It's going to be a space for teachers to talk and just get some ideas of how you can just be more aware of the way that you're directing students or working with community members. So that will be happening. But if you are interested in learning more about Tessa as a human and the amazing work she does, like with She Is Fierce and that, Tessa, how can people find out more information about you?
Oh my gosh, I didn't know I had to plug things.
Sorry.
If you're interested in reaching out directly, I can like provide my email in a different space.
Yeah. Do you have a website people can check out?
I do. this is hilarious. See, this is like the life of like an artist who like doesn't know how to market themselves. I do, but the URL is really complicated because
okay.
it's like a very new
so
thing.
What,
but if you
we'll put it
Google
under the
me,
show notes.
Yes.
You can Google
yeah.
you.
If you look up, if you are interested in SheIsFierceSeattleStories@gmail.com is our email. And you can
awesome.
Also find us She Is Fierce Seattle Stories on Instagram and Facebook. And we also have a website that will eventually be SheIsFierce.com. And so, yeah, so those
Great.
Things exist.
Yeah.
Mostly reaching out to me directly. If you Google my name, my website will come up. You might have to scroll
there
a little bit
because
I'm terrible at making digital materials for
That's
myself.
Fine. It sucks. I get you. So,
yeah.
I mean, if anybody's listening to you and you're like, okay, I'm not still sure, just reach out to the podcast and we will totally direct you with Tessa and
yeah.
get you her website and all that. But do check the show notes. We'll make sure that we have her website and the She Is Fierce contact information as well. But thank you so much, Tessa, for joining
yeah,
me.
Yeah, no problem.
And hopefully this has inspired you to go make art that matters and just start doing things differently in your community. We'd love to hear from you. Feel free to leave some comments, rate us, download us, share us. Until next time, we will be seeing ya.
Yeah.
All right. Thank
Woo.
You.
Thanks so much for tuning in. If you're out there and you are struggling and feeling alone in making art that matters, or maybe you're ready to start the journey, I invite you to join us at ReTheater. ReTheater is an online theater and education company whose goal is to inspire educators, communities, and young artists to make art that matters. We have so many ways for you to get involved, from tech talks to masterclasses, mini retreats online, and even a dedicated online community just for educators. You can find out more at www.retheaterco.com. Go there, find out all the awesome ways that you can join us, and we'll see you next time.